Baseball is back, and so is MLB.tv. Watch every out-of-market, regular season game on your favorite streaming devices. Anywhere, anytime, all season long. Follow the action live or on demand. Track four games at once with multi-view mode. And catch up with in-game highlights. Plus, original programs, minor league broadcasts, and local pre- and post-game shows. Go to MLB.tv to start your free trial today. Blackout and other restrictions apply. Major League Baseball trademarks used with permission.
One of the best in the biz covering Major League Baseball, MLB Network, and more. John Morosi is with us. John, thank you so much for joining us on this home opener in Cleveland. How are you today?
Outstanding. A happy opening day to all of you in the great state of Ohio. Great to be with you here. Of course, you know well that the American League Central very near and dear to my heart, so glad to hear you got a beautiful day there in Cleveland today.
Yeah, it is sunny. It's cold.
It's cold, but
it is beautifully sunny.
It's cold as we always expect around here, right?
That's right. No doubt about it. John, you know, when I was looking at everybody at MLB Network making their predictions, I know you were one of the few guys that picked the Twins. And it's a really interesting pick because I think there's this general sentiment that the American League Central stinks. And even though the Indians lineup clearly went backwards, that they would still dominate the division. And all offseason I was saying the Twins have closed the gap, Now, I still got the Indians ahead by a little bit. Tell us why you picked the Twins over the Tribe in the Central.
Well, the rather simple way I'm looking at it is this, is that I think the difference in the gap between the margin by which Cleveland's pitching might still be a little bit better than Minnesota's pitching, to me, is smaller than what I expect the gap to be between Minnesota's lineup and Cleveland's lineup. I think the Twins are going to have an excellent lineup. It really didn't show up in a big way, I guess, until yesterday's game, and it's, of course, it's the first series of the year. But the Twins scored the most runs last year of any AL team that did not make the playoffs. And to that group, they've added Cruz, who has the most home runs this decade of any player in baseball, and C.J. Cron, and then a couple guys that have been All-Stars before in Jonathan Scope, Marwin Gonzalez. So the lineup is constructed in a way that if Sano and Buxton pan out in a way that we've always been talking about forever, that maybe it'll finally happen, that becomes a bonus as opposed to being a requirement. I think the Twins lineup is better, right? Certainly right now, certainly without Lindor, I think it's better than Cleveland's lineup, at least at the moment. And we saw over the weekend, I think Odorizzi had a very good start, in addition, of course, to Berríos in the opener. And I thought Martin Perez had a very good Sunday start as well. Brief, but he was there. Then, of course, Pineda came in there. I guess Pineda first, then Perez. So, to me, there's enough to like there with the Minnesota rotation that has a chance to get better. And I think Cleveland, certainly, we know that we saw Kluber and Bauer still back-to-back, and that's still a special duo right now in Major League Baseball. But I just think Minnesota has gotten to have a better lineup now, and I think that we're going to see that play out over the course of the year.
You know, John, I agree with you. In fact, I said before that we started the season last week, I think the Twins win the division. I agree with you. Because I just don't know how far this pitching can take the Tribe. The lineup is, as you say, it's not good enough right now, and they lowered the payroll, which is disappointing. But in reality, the pitching is still great. How far could this pitching take the Tribe?
Well, that's really the question. I think we're probably going to find that out because they're going to have to win games in maybe a little bit of a different way than they even won it last year. And last year was remarkable because they had to really ride those starters a lot because, you know, Tito there were not a lot of great options for him in the bullpen. And so he had to try to get as many innings as he could out of the starters. And he did that and still won the division. But I think we all knew that there was a vulnerability there. And, of course, that they've since then lost Miller and Allen. So there's just a pretty big, I think, some uncertainty there in the late innings. But I think the rotation itself is really as good as it's ever been. Now, the question that we've got, I think everybody has here, is, okay, well, if things don't go well at the start, if they're under 500 at the end of April, or if they're still right around 500 in May, the off-season and the rumblings about Bauer and the rumblings about Kluber potentially being available, they've quieted for now, but they still exist. They're still out there in the ether because the essential issue, as you touched on, is the payroll and where they're going to have to take that in the future and how they're going to reposition themselves for whatever the next window ends up being. I mean, they still have a chance to win, clearly, right now, But I also think the Indians, I give them a lot of credit because I think over the years they've done a very good job, and this goes back to when Mark Shapiro was there, but certainly with Chris and Mike as well, is they're pretty realistic about who they are and what they've got. And I think at the end of the day, you might be able to win a series with the roster as currently constructed, but you look at it top to bottom, and I really think there was a pretty firm line last year based on 162 games of lining them up and saying Red Sox, Yankees, Astros in some order, and then there was a gap, and then there was Cleveland. And I think that they realize that they've got to find a way to address that gap before I think we're going to see this team really get invested heavily, because that was a pretty brief exit last year. We all saw it, and I'm not sure that if you look at it realistically, how you write the script for the end of the season in October to be a lot different than it was last year if the same principal teams are involved in the playoffs once again.
John Morosi, Fox Sports, MLB Network is with us. And, yeah, it's great points, John. And you know, but you talk about the front office. They obviously have as good a front office as any team in baseball. They have as good a manager as any team in baseball. And as good a rotation, probably the best in baseball. But, you know, and you brought up the point that the front office at Cleveland is used to dealing with not having the payrolls of the Yankees and the Red Sox and some of these other teams. However, it felt almost unprecedented to me that with this great front office and this great manager and a great pitching staff, John, that if they were all in the open market, would all be making more money, as would Lindor, as would Brad Hand, as would Jose Ramirez. Those guys are making about $70, $75 million between them. On the open market, they'd make $150 or more. And that to not take advantage of that in this window and cut the payroll down $20 million, like, John, if they had just kept Brantley and not traded Gomes, the payroll would be roughly the same as last year, and we'd be looking at this lineup a lot differently, don't you think?
I agree, but here's kind of the issue that I think the Indians are looking at, and I think they're correct to give it a lot of thought here. Their goal, and they probably look around the division, and yeah. And the Tigers probably, and I'm speaking to you here from Michigan, I don't know that they're ever going to spend in relationship to their competition in the way that they used to. Mike Ilitch made that so, and of course, sadly, he's passed on. And so that's changed, I think, the essential dynamic of the way the Tigers operate. And so as a result, the Indians don't really have to deal with the specter, at least at the moment, of a truly big-spending, big-market team in their division. There have been times when the White Sox have grown it, and the times when the Twins have grown it, but the Tigers were kind of the outlier for a while, and I don't see them going back to where they were percentage-wise again. And I think the Indians' model, rightly or wrongly, this is just my outward look at what I think they're doing here, is they're trying to have a generally competitive team for a long period of time. I think if they were going to go all in and say, listen, one of their courses could have been, we think we've got one or two more years of having a really special pitching staff and a really special lineup, and we're going to go all in on these 2 years, and then there's going to be like a cliff drop, and we're going to be a cheap team with no stars, and that's it. And I think that has to have been at least one of the options on the table. And I think they don't want to do that. I think they want to sort of stretch this thing out as long as they can, be generally competitive. Yes, bring the payroll down. They've done that. We've seen that happen. But do it without having an absolute precipitous drop in competitiveness, because and in those years we've seen it when the Indians have been in fourth or fifth place, attendance has been down, and I think the Indians don't want to see that. So I think the sustainability of the model, they want to be competitive without probably breaking the bank and trimming too much from the farm system in order to make that happen.
John, when it's all said and done, you talked about the fact that Bauer and Kluber, there were talks about trades. And obviously part of that was payroll. But in the end, do you think they didn't get traded because once they cut the other payroll offensively, they felt like, hey, let's run it back again with this pitching staff one more time? Or did it just come down to they didn't think they were offered enough for either Kluber or Bauer?
I think it was the latter. I think they were truly available. I mean, I talked to enough people around the game that said that for the right prices that they were available, that they could have been moved. And San Diego was one team in particular. But I think for those players to have been dealt, it would have had to have been a clear win for the Indians, and it would have had to have been a situation where there was a team that was really stepping out of its comfort zone to make an overwhelming offer. Because to your point, once they trimmed the payroll elsewhere, they were able to make a baseball trade, and they didn't really have a baseball trade that was there that made sense for them, that made them better right now. Because when you look at their club at the moment, and certainly it's magnified because Lindor's hurt, but this lineup is screaming for a third place hitter that plays a corner outfield spot. And so I don't know who that yep. player would have been necessarily, but that's where a trade of Kluber or Bauer could have made sense, because you could have said, listen, I feel like I'm getting a guy, if you'd imagine like a Christian Yelich from last offseason, that type of a player is someone that they're missing. But even then, I'll say this. You look at what Domingo Santana is doing right now for the Mariners. Why couldn't he be doing that for the Indians? I look at Adam Jones, same thing.
Yep.
These guys are not expensive players, and they're good. And they're addressing, I think, a need that the Indians have at present that I think will, unfortunately for the Indians right now, stay with them for the foreseeable future.
All right, John, let's get to the matchup here today. Indians obviously have their home opener, and the White Sox are in town. Good news for the Indians. They don't have to face the Twins again, at least not today. The White Sox are 1-2. They've scored more runs than the Indians. What do you make of this series? The Indians should fare well, don't you think?
I agree. And this is where, again, as much as there is certainly some concern and pessimism about certain parts of the roster, this is still going to be a team, I believe, that's at least a wild card level and certainly winning in the mid-80s of games, because they're, I still think, a better team than Chicago, a better team than Detroit, a better team than Kansas City by strong margins here. The White Sox, to me, are interesting because you look at the way their lineup is set up, and they will go, I believe, this year as far as Yoan Moncada and Eloy Jimenez will take them. I think Jose Abreu is a consistent player, but the potential upside for this team is Moncada and Jimenez. And, of course, Jimenez just signed the long-term extension to put him in the big leagues right away. We've seen some good production at different times from Daniel Palka, a very interesting player there. He's going to bat second today. So I think that to me, is an interesting club. They could surprise you a bit on the positive side. Giolito, a very good outing for them over the weekend. Of course, it's Nova against the Indians today. But I look at this advantage, clearly, to me, it belongs to the Indians in this series and should over the course of the season when they play the White Sox. But to me, I'm always excited to see just how good the big-name prospects are once they start playing here in the major leagues on a consistent basis. Of course, Moncada's been there in the past. But to me, Moncada, Jimenez are the two guys to watch. If I'm a Tribe fan, to see how the White Sox look this year, I would look at those two guys most especially.
Yeah, John, when you talk about Jimenez, you talk about him signing that extension, and that's why he's in the big leagues to start the season instead of them manipulating the service time to the end of April. The Indians have been very good at doing that in the past. They inked Kluber to an extension, Carrasco to two extensions, Jose Ramirez, Yan Gomes in the past, Michael Brantley in the past. They were not able to do that with Lindor and probably won't at this point. But do you see that becoming, because of the way free agency has been outside of the super elite player, you think this is going to be more of a trend, seeing these young guys, even guys who have never played the big leagues like Jimenez, getting locked up earlier?
I do. And I think a part of that is we've seen it even today, Xander Bogaerts' extension with the Red Sox.
Right.
Teams are still spending big dollars. I think Jeff Passan's number was something along the lines like $4 billion in extensions, or might not have been that big, but it's huge. I mean, like just in extensions alone in the last several months here. And to me, it really shows that there's an interest in paying players who are in their prime years. And teams have the money, and they'll spend on players when they're in their prime years. And I think that's a really key takeaway here, where the market's working for some players just fine. And so the revenues being as strong as they are and teams wanting to keep their best talent, they'll do it when they feel like they're paying for their optimum years, which are in their 20s. And so Jimenez is an example of that. Bogaerts, who arrived in the big leagues very early, is an example of that. The extension for Mike Trout is an example of that, just as free agency was for the likes of Harper and Machado. So I see it as a trend. I agree with you. I think that based on the way things have gone, Lindor, I don't get the sense, and I read Paul Dolan's comments there to Zach Meisel recently, that they're in The Athletic. I think to me, the writing's on the wall that the Indians don't feel optimistic about their chances to sign him back. We'll see what happens in the coming years, but I do think that Lindor may be, based on this current trend of extensions, whether it's Arenado and Josh, or potentially we'll see how things play out with Donaldson, but we're seeing the extensions there for Goldschmidt, others like that. I think that Lindor probably will be the exception to what's now becoming that trend for Major League Baseball.
I think Mike Clevinger would be a guy that, if I'm the Indians, yes, knowing that the clock's running out on Bauer and Kluber, right? He would make sense to lock up?
Yes. I would say, if I was looking at the situation, of all the players on the roster, the one who would make the most sense as an extension candidate for the Indians right now is Mike Clevinger, and I think he would make a lot of sense to do that because he to me, I've always been a big Clevinger guy. I'm really impressed by his stuff. I like his moxie and composure on the mound. I think he's just a fantastic pitcher. So to me, he's a very worthy heir to be an opening day pitcher for the Indians in the future, and I think they'll do everything they can right now to try to find a way to lock him up long term.
John, last thing on Trevor Bauer. Yeah, I've had my ups and downs with him myself, but you know, he's a weird guy, right? Because he says things, he gets into fights with people on Twitter, he says some controversial things. On the other hand, he seems to love baseball as publicly as much as anybody out there that plays the game. His game has taken off. He's been one of the best pitchers in baseball since the All-Star break of 2017, and I picked him, not that I'm going out on a huge limb here, I picked him to win the Cy Young this year. Is Trevor Bauer good for baseball, bad for baseball, a little of both?
I would say a little of both. I think that there are some things that you know, just that I've seen on social media that personally I don't like, but maybe I'm not his core audience in that regard, and that's fine. But I do think that his overall enthusiasm for the game, the way he likes to talk about it, the way he's comfortable being an individual, I think is great for the game. That to me, and I'll be quick about this point, but the individuality is important in baseball. And as long as it's within the rounds of the realm of good taste and showing respect to fans and others in the game, I think it's great. I think individuality is important. And frankly, it's also lucrative. Bryce Harper got the contract that he got, for many reasons. He's been a great player, certainly has had great seasons. But he got that contract in part because he was on the cover of SI at the age of 16 and has never been afraid to be his own individual superstar. And I think I hope that fans are paying attention to this and watching players, and the players are watching this and realizing, hey, if I'm an individual, if I kind of go against the grain here, if I show more of my personality, maybe I'll get paid for it. And that, to me, should be a very obvious conclusion that I think for some reason it escapes players a little bit. So I think that aspect of what Trevor is doing is very healthy. He certainly is an individual. He's not afraid to be himself. And I think, again, as long as it's not offending other people, I think that's acceptable.
John, great stuff. We appreciate your time on opening day. Thank you so much.
Thanks
for joining us.
My pleasure. Have a great beginning to the year there in Cleveland. Look forward to seeing you guys here over the course of the season as well. Thanks so much.
Thank you, John. Thanks. John Morosi.
We get it. Attention spans just aren't what they used to be. Heads in social media and eyes on Netflix. But what do people do with their ears? Well, for one, they're listening to audio. Americans spend 4.4 hours with audio every day. Oh, and you want the proof? Well, you just sat through this ad that's now approaching 30 seconds. What could you say to a potential customer in 30 seconds? Let Odyssey put together a media plan tailor-made for your unique marketing needs. Advertise with Odyssey. Visit ads.odyssey.com.